So first I want to speak about this idea of the Tower of Babylon in reverse, which I didn't explain much. The idea came of a sentence where Mother said that the main duty of Orwell is to build the Tower of Babylon in reverse. And a lot of Indian people who were at the seminar didn't know the story about the Tower of Babylon, so I had to explain the story first, which is that that humanity had the idea of building a big tower which goes to the sky and which is so big that it can touch God's domain. And in the Bible, the idea is that God didn't like that and then made the people speak different languages so that they could not collaborate any further and had to stop the building of the tower. And it has become a symbol of the false idea of humanity to want to be like gods and not to be able to reach that point. So as far as I understood, Mother's idea of building the Tower of Babylon in reverse means to be modest again and get back to the inside and find there a basis on what the humanity can collaborate in unity and in diversity without these differences of cultures, of religions, of ideologies, and be able to do this work in fraternity and unity again. So this is the basic idea behind it. And I went a little bit through the history. So now we know that about 4 million years ago, the first beings which are similar to human beings were walking on Earth. And they had a type of a brain which made it possible for them to work upright and see in front of them, and having the two hands free to manipulate the material world. So this was maybe the beginning of this being which we call the human being. And in the archaic age, let's say from this 4 million years up to about 10 or 40,000 years back, it's not very clear. The historians in this periods are not very clear because there's not so many things left from these periods, especially we have no written notice. We have only maybe some small buildings or artifacts, and it's very speculative how humanity was in the beginning. But Gebser had this idea that in the archaic age there was a so-called non-dimensional being, which just was a part of nature like all the other animals, but which had a little advantage of being upright and acting with the hands and having a new type of a nervous system and a new type of brain, which had a certain possibility to reflect. But in the beginning of this evolutionary process, it was not developed. It was just the basis of the development. So in interaction, in a dialectic process with nature, this human being developed some qualities. And if we have to imagine that early human being that was non-dimensional, we can also say it was deeply asleep. The consciousness was deeply asleep, and only the daily life was the master, the teacher of the beings. There were floods and rain and cold climates, and there was not enough food for everybody. There were wild animals and very difficult conditions. And the human being, the early human being, was not very well built to defend itself against all these conditions. But as the brain increased, there was this capacity of invention. So this human being in the evolutionary process was able to use tools, to use enlargements of its hands, his feet, and then this being was also able to build shelters of a more complicated structures against the rain, against the cold climate, against the heat. And so the possibility to survive slowly increased with these cultural techniques of using tools, of building shelters. And during this archaic age, a certain quality of reflection, what can be eaten, what is poisonous, even maybe what can be used as a remedy for diseases, was already there. But there were, the transmission was only the oral transmission, so people could only transmit a little knowledge to the next generation because the memory was not so big. And we see this with the higher developed animals like chimpanzees or orangutans or other higher developed animals, that they transmit some of their knowledge to their children, and they also have a certain knowledge of a species which gives them higher possibilities to survive, like building shelters. Also some birds are building nests or other type of shelters, which is not specific to human only, but it is there in other parts. And then at the end of the archaic age, there came a revelation, some type of a revelation, that these human beings started to manipulate the nature. That means they developed this idea of the magical. They developed the idea that with a spell, with a dance, with a chant, or different ways, it is possible to influence nature. And this possibility to influence nature was mainly an idea which we still have with the shamanistic people, or with the people who are interested in magic and these type of things, that there is a possibility of the human mind, of the human brain, to manipulate the nature in favor of you. If we read these old stories, they must have come to a very high degree of manipulating nature by having contacts with the spirits of nature, which, for example, in the Indian traditions are these devas, or in the European tradition are fairies and gnomes, and which are immaterial beings responsible for plants, for trees, for animals. And it seems that in the magic age, humanity had this capacity to be in direct contact with water spirits, with animal spirits, with plant spirits, and by this direct contact to manipulate the nature in such a way that they had some favors from this manipulation. But this manipulation were also used for power. So people who had this capacity, this, let's call it alchemistic capacity or magic capacity to manipulate nature, were more powerful than other people who had not developed this quality. And so maybe the first difference in social perception was this shamans or magicians who had some extra powers to manipulate the nature, and who were also able to use the guide to guide people in a positive way. When they were sick, they could give them some herbs to cure them, or when they the earth didn't give enough food. They had maybe some ideas how to nourish the plants that they could grow better. So this magic way of manipulating nature was the main idea of the next age of humanity, and a lot of this knowledge has been lost in between. We still have the magic practices, we still have people's concerned about alchemy, we still have shamanistic oriented people who are curing diseases with shamanistic techniques, especially in the tribal areas and in ancient societies. They are, have still their position. Let's go into Tibet or somewhere or other remote areas where we still find these people. So we can imagine a little bit how this magic age has been. And I feel, for example, Tolkien has given a lot of ideas about, in The Lord of the Rings, about all this development of the magic age. But we have a lot of science fiction literature, and other people, even historians, would have tried to imagine how this time has been. So I feel we have to see that this period has brought a lot of interesting possibilities to mankind, which later on has been lost or replaced by other things which we will see next. So after the magic age, there was a period where the development went further on, and mankind developed this language which was written first with symbols, easy symbols like pictograms, where they tried to show the nature in a picture and then align these pictures of a bird, of a foot, of a axe or something, and then give these alignments of pictograms a sense, which led to a development of a type of a language. And if we talk of the Tower of Babylon, probably in this period where the language developed, in several parts of the world, several types of language must have developed. We know about Chinese ideograms, we know about hieroglyphs from Egypt, we know about the Sumerian type of writing, we know about the pictograms from the Indus Valley culture also. And so in different parts of the world, different languages and different cultures had their origin. And this different development of cultures had still also some common basis, which led to similar things. For example, it led to a development of a religion that has a holy book where all the knowledge of the people and the old histories are written down for later generations, where also all the technological knowledge of the civilization is noted down. So if we go to the papyri from the hieroglyphs, or to the ancient philosophy books of Greece, or to the tablets from Sumer and Babylon, or to other of these books like Vedas and Upanishads, or ancient Chinese philosophy books like Tao Te Ching or so. So we find very similar developments, and the developments go always to the direction of creating an order, a structure of society, a structure of a city, a structure of agriculture, a structure of commerce, of exchanging goods in a certain way, of having accounts for the exchange of these goods, of having a type of money or something similar to money for the exchange of the goods. So nearly all the what we call higher civilizations, which happened between 5000 BC and 1500 after Christ, have developed different types of philosophies, ideologies, and possibilities for human beings to live together in a better way, to produce in a better way, to exchange goods in a better way, and to explain reality in some way. But we have to see that in the mythic age, still the dimensionality was limited. So Gebser talks about two dimensions. There was this possibility to reflect and to invent this language, but there was not a real knowledge, not a real perception of reality. Most of the things were on speculation basis, and there was not a clear line how things are functioning. Man was still, as in the archaic age, a little bit given to the pity of nature. Big diseases like pests or other things killed thousands of people, and the comfort of the buildings and all these type of things were quite limited, especially the possibilities of waste management and, for example, having this relationship between the thrown out waste and cholera epidemies, and all these things were not given. So the expectation of life of these people in a normal way were quite short. People didn't grow much older than 30 years because of the lack of certain knowledge. And then another very important thing of the mythic age was that their mythic age developed a type of violence among humanity. That means there was a very strong and limited structure where there was a hierarchy. On the top of the hierarchy there was a king or a queen or an emperor, a general, or maybe also a philosopher sometimes. And these people were people of higher class. They had a saying what other people had to do. They ordered the other people to do what they wanted. And so in all these so-called higher civilizations, we had about 90% of the people who were living more or less as slaves for the rest of the humanity. They were not able to move or to guide their own lives, but they were only there to serve the other 10% of humanity. And we still have rests of this mythic age in our society, that we still have this aristocratic or financial oriented or knowledge oriented academics who feel that they have a superiority to other people and that they have the right to tell them what is wrong and what is right, how they have to behave and how they have to work and to guide their life. So this part of the mythic age has not been overcome by the modern age. And now I want to say something about the modern age. So in the 15th century, some tendencies, especially in Europe, developed to go deeper into scientific ways of seeing things. So the religion and old hierarchies were not automatically accepted anymore. We have predecessors of these movements in Greek, in Egypt, in other societies, but it was just very small, very narrow circles of people who had developed a higher way of seeing reality and understanding a deeper meaning of philosophy. And we can maybe say it was one of thousands who was part of this development before the 15th century. But with the printing press coming up in 15th century and the possibility to give knowledge to everybody, these ideas of higher philosophy, of science, of natural science, started to spread and started to put into question the old societies, the old ideas of ideologies, of different type of people, of castes, of higher birth, or and slowly a type of a socialist thinking came up. That means that all men are born equal. For example, in the Middle Age, there was in Europe this idea when Adam was digging the earth and Eve was spinning the threads, there was no noble people. So how can it come that now we are not equal to each other? And all these socialist type of ideas came slowly, slowly up from 15th century through the new sciences which were born out of this alchemistry and magic way of doing things, more systematic way of acting, of producing things, and a more systematic way of organizing came up, and that's what we call the Renaissance and later what we call the Modern Age. And up to the, let's say, 18th, 19th century, it had developed in such a way that the ancient structures of society were not adequate anymore to continue the ruling of society. So that what we call democracy today, where everybody has one voice, was formed. So the idea that everybody should vote and everybody should have one voice and everybody should develop the possibility to participate in the development of mankind was brought into society. In the beginning, it was only the rich people who could vote, and or the people who had a land and a horse, and then it was meant also for the workers and for the peasants, and even for women it was a big problem for a long time. So, for example, in Switzerland, only in 1972, we abolished the last laws which defavorized women being part of the society. So the modern age also has developed very slowly towards a certain knowledge of science, of natural science, but also abolishing a lot of old things like this hierarchical structure of feudalism and bringing a new way of perception of the society, but not totally overcoming it. There were new rulers, like people in scientific positions, from medicine to physics to biology to chemistry. And so we have as a heritage from this modern age the pharmaceutical complex, we have the bankers, we have the all these new hierarchies which have formed during the development of the modern age, and which were still a little bit oriented through this mythical way of seeing things and not really scientific. So only by the beginning of 19th century, the big movements like the Russian Revolution and the revolution in Paris from 1871 and then the Chinese Revolution brought this breakthrough where some of the societies decided really everybody is equal and everybody has to have the same right and everybody has the right to vote and everybody has the right to be part of the society in the same way. It was especially the ideas of Engels, Marx and Lenin and some other philosophers of the 19th and 20th century that brought ideology fitting to the modern age and really bringing the advantages of knowledge through the higher development. But I think at the end of the 20th century, starting maybe 1968 with the revolutions in Paris, but also maybe with the foundation of Orville, there was again a new idea coming up. Mother and Sri Aurobindo stand in a other type of tradition, in a type of tradition which was there in Egypt, which was there with the Greek philosophers, which was there with the Roman philosophers, but which was only a very, very narrow part of the society always, which were these people who had the idea that human being is something more than just a scientifically touchable thing. That there is something beyond, there is a soul, there is a spirit, there is a feeling, an emotion, which goes beyond the physical being, which goes beyond the lower vital part of man. And on the basis of all these philosophical developments, Mother Sri Aurobindo, but also other philosophers in India, like Krishnamurti or other philosophers in Europe, now developed a new idea of an integral and holistic view of the world. The integral and holistic step means that we cannot stop on the idea that social equality and scientific look at the things are sufficient for the future development of mankind. So, with the end of the 20th century, something started to develop what we call the Green Age or the Holistic Age, and a group of people that we could maybe call the cultural-oriented, spiritual-oriented people arose. And so now we can say sociologically that we have about one-third of the mankind still living in the mythic age, the conservative type of people, one-third of the people living in the modern age, which is the technology-oriented and social-oriented age of the 15th to 20th century, but already one-third of the humanity is having this tendency to go towards this green, integral, holistic idea of organizing the world and of starting to do things in a different way. We may not see them in politics too much yet. We have green parties all over the world, and we have maybe also a new age movement which has a certain development of holistic and spiritual orientation, but it's only traces. And maybe the next generation, which we could call the indigo children, are the first generation of people who have this perspective of living in a different world. So, as far as I understand, Orville is a type of a cradle for these people to create a generation of people, let's call them indigo children, who have this perspective of living in an integral and holistic way and go towards the way what Sri Aurobindo called the supermind and the superman, which is a other type of personality, another type of being, which we just can maybe imagine a little bit mentally, but we don't have a real clue what it is. So Orville might be the first step to build this Tower of Babylon in reverse. And I felt that there are three things to be aware of when we start to build this new society, this new world, and that is to honor the past. So the first thing for me is that we should be able to see what were the good things in the ages before and how to filtrate these good things out of the unnecessary and mistaken things from the past, like their beautiful buildings, their is some knowledge about plants or animals or spirits or philosophy, which may help humanity to lead a better life and which has developed over these 4 million years of human evolution. And it's very important to be very clear that this past has to be honored as our roots, as our where we come from, as our heritage, and has to be transmitted in some way. So one of the important signs which will remain is certainly the historical science, which talks about this past and which gives the children and also the other people of the society the possibility to witness what has happened in former generations. The next and important thing is to manage the present. So what the big difficulty of our society now is that we are not able to manage the present anymore. We are somewhere lost in the modernity. That means we have armament race which has gone out of control, we have a pollution that has gone out of control, we have a climate change that has gone out of control. We have lots of false developments from the ages before, from the modernity and from the mythical age, which have left some big problems. And I thought that there's three main problems which are left from the old society. One is the religion, this idea of a concept of sin and this tendency to create inner fear, inner feeling of guilt, some type of a psychological obsession of this higher being or of the devil, and all these things which religions have brought into society, or also this false ideas about sexuality or other confused mindsets which have come through religion. So if we want to manage the present, one thing we still have to overcome is religion. The second thing is that we have created a type of mass media like newspapers, TV, radio, other internet, where a lot of falsehood and false ideas are spread. And it is not running in a scientific way, so it is not an image from the reality, but it's an invention of some power groups, of some people who want to take advantage. So to manage the present, a main thing is also to overcome this falsehood going through the press and to the mass media, and to bring these media to a way where they really show the reality and not imaginative things of some power groups or other things. Then the third thing is the ideology behind schooling systems. We have still this idea of transmitting knowledge from former times in a way that people have to learn things by heart, or people have to obey these old laws and have to be punished or have to learn in a way which is not adequate to our time anymore. I think internet has already done a good job in that way, that knowledge is not a privilege anymore of a small group, so everybody can have access to knowledge. But the content of the knowledge is still very much impregnated by old ideas and unnecessary things and still spoils the mind of the children. And the way we do our schooling system, I feel, is not satisfying. So we have to develop something on the basis maybe of Mother's idea of free progressing or on other ways to give the full responsibility to the children for the learning process and also to the adults, naturally. The fourth thing which remains from the old society and which we have to manage in the present is the financial system. The financial system has created a lot of inequalities and strange circumstances in the world where beauty and good and truth don't have the main role, but privileges and private interests and egoistic and greedy ideas are in the center of the thing. So here we also have to abolish all these unnecessary things and come to a possibility where we can have a free exchange of credits amongst conscious and responsible individual citizens beyond money systems and beyond financial systems which have proven that they don't function. Another thing which we also still believe is the laws and regulations of the mythic age, like judges, courts, punishments, law books and all these type of things, which have never led to a society which is free of crime or developing in a free way, or we are far away of being just. There's corruption and everything everywhere. So this system has totally failed, and I think we have to develop something instead which is absolutely different and which cannot be compared with the old system. This is a work I feel we also have to do here in our university to see how this can be developed in a different way. And the last point to manage the present for me is the control over energy and resources. Energy and resources is some common goods for mankind, so it should not be in the hands of a few people like oil or solar energy or the minerals or the houses or the food production or all these things. Should be equally distributed among mankind, and we have to find a way, if we want to build this Tower of Babylon in reverse, how to distribute goods and resources and energy in such a way that all humanity can profit of it. So to have a new society means we have to follow the idea of the French Revolution, like equality, liberty and fraternity in the center, and then find ways to express human unity, but in an unlimited diversity, and there should not be any ideologies or religions or laws that limit this possibility. So then, where shall that go? The third and last point is to create a conscious future. How can we become people who create a conscious future? So we have to overcome the archaic, magic, mystic, and modern age and all the handicaps they have created inside the human soul, inside the human being, inside the society, which is not an easy task, as we see that we only do baby steps forward to that. And a green age, which is based on integral thinking, on holistic acting, on unlimited possibilities, with a physical body, with a mental concept, with a psychic and emotional way of solving problems of the past, is needed for a future society. The spiritual being has to be based on the intuitive mind, and maybe later on these things which Sri Aurobindo calls overmind or supermind. So the future supermind world is something that goes beyond this individualistic ego, beyond the ideas of the lower vital body, beyond the ideas of the lower physical body, and creates a psychic type of a being which is not that material anymore as we became in the modern age, because it will be an unlimited and soul-conscious being that can handle the control of the life from inside without needing an outer discipline, without needing an outer law. It can manage the body, the mind, the soul, and it can align it by itself with the divine consciousness, and so have this guidance, which is not only a scientific knowledge, but which is a truth knowledge, which goes beyond scientific knowledge. The inner and the outer part will be in equality, in harmony, in balance, and able to act in a conscious and responsible way to guide and synchronize the world following the divine plan. This new creature of After or Superman will be able to develop integrated visions for a society without rules and regulations and without belonging, with different financial and educational systems, where people will live in a world of unity free from religious and political ideology, like John Lennon already brought it in a very few words in his poem about Imagine. Imagine there is no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do, nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. Imagine no possessions, I wonder if you can. No need of greed or hunger, a brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you may join us and the world will live as one.